welcome to another episode of Unpublished. My name is Amy.
I'm James.
This is round two of
Attempt
us recording.
Two.
We have had a technical glitch. Yep. Today we're going to be answering questions from our membership, the Inspired Collective. But before we dive in, I thought we'd kind of give everyone an update as to our life because it's kind of been a bit of a wild week.
Yeah, so we are currently recording this from the guest bedroom at my parents' house because we've had to, basically we're doing two moves. We had to move out, just for, you know, rental tenancy things, we had to move out of our apartment at the end of March and wait 5 weeks before we went to England.
Yeah. And as I was saying before, we were so rudely cut off. It was not enjoyable. It was hard. But I think it's a good thing that we've got kind of like two moves because we're basically culling everything we own.
Yeah.
And so it's been like, there's going to be two cullings. So yeah. We've had to get rid of and give away so much of our stuff.
And we thought it was so much stuff. And then we still had so much to move. It still took us 3 days to move. And we're what is this?
I mean, I look at these big bags of crap and I'm like, what are you? Why are you required in my life?
Why? I think also clothes. I can cut another half. I thought I cut half my clothes. I can cut another half.
You can't cut another half.
I think so.
I think I did really well with clothes.
Yeah,
I think
you were better than me.
Yeah, I was brutal.
My problem is my one clothing vice is I go like pretty standard cheap t-shirts, chinos, shorts, everything, but I love an expensive jacket or coat,
which is just so sad because we live in a country that doesn't require them.
Yep.
So you've had these beautiful coats, your one true vice, in sitting in the closet. They've hardly ever been worn,
and I'll buy like one a year.
Yeah.
And a nice, I'll buy like a really nice coat or jacket every year.
Yeah.
And then that's just piled up to be over the course of the last 12 years or something.
It's 12 big jackets
that
you never wear.
And they take up so much room.
And the saddest part is we're going to a country where you could wear them, but trying to fit them, it's going to be a pain in the beehole.
I think I'm just going to sneakily put some in the wardrobe here in the guest bedroom.
Yeah, I hope your mum doesn't notice.
Hope she doesn't notice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've been doing that move. It's been big, physically just hard work. And also saying goodbye to this home that was like I cannot... I'm feeling a lot of grief. Like, I simultaneously feel like this is exactly what we are meant to be doing. Like, I have never felt, really, honestly, I don't feel like I've ever felt like we're so on the path. Like, I know this is what we're meant to be doing. But, like, the grief of leaving that home is very real for me because the 4 years we spent there was, like, the most transformative years of my life.
Yeah, really. We didn't really even have a business.
No.
But we did. We're just starting out before we moved there. And that's where we grew our whole... Everything.
And it was just like this little capsule of James and Amy creative magic where we got to grow and make and create and believe in ourselves and choose ourselves and
live through 12 months of lockdown together.
Yes. And it was like really at the first 4 years of our marriage.
Yeah, true. We moved in pretty much straight after we got back from our honeymoon.
It's just was so beautiful and we outgrew it. But like I am so grateful for that space.
Yeah, me too. It was really sad to say goodbye.
It was. We so Ash, who owns our cafe, The Whole Leaf, that we go to every day, has moved in. And I just really hope that the vibes and the beauty of that space just like go to her. She's a musician. I want the house to be full of music. And that kind of soothed me a little bit.
Mm.
But yeah.
So if anything, you get attached to some walls.
I know.
That, like you haven't.
No... I personified the house so much. Like, I was writing to the house this morning in my journal, and I was like, take care of Ash.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is like, Amy, you cray cray.
You cray cray, Amy.
Okay, is that really our updates?
I think so. I think that's
great.
Good.
Okay, cool.
Probably won't have a podcast next week because you're going to be in Tasmania and I'm going to be still here.
Yeah, so we do have a big few weeks coming up. I'm going to go down to see my parents in Tasmania, spend some time with them, and then we're going away with friends.
Yep. Be good. Okay, so questions.
Questions.
So these are questions that have come in from the collective.
Yes.
And it's for everyone, but only people from the collective
will
have the opportunity to ask the questions.
Yes. Wanted to listen and spend some time with this incredible community that we're creating at the moment.
I haven't seen any of them. How many questions do you reckon we got?
There's a lot, maybe like 15, 16, and some of them are big and chunky.
Nice. It could be a long app.
Could be a long app.
Nice.
We'll see how we go. We could do part two.
We could do part two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking that we could, next week, we could each do a podcast and we could answer the questions and we could see our different responses.
Oh, I like that. Okay. Well, do you want to see how we go? And maybe we'll stop at like the 40 minute mark.
Yeah.
And then what was remaining we'll do part two next week.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I thought it would be amusing to see the different advice that we give.
Yeah. That's going to be funny. I like that.
Okay, cool. So we're going to start with an incredible poet, author, Just a beautiful creative that I had the privilege of meeting when I was touring last year, Ruth Rostrop. Ruth has got some really, really good questions here, so I wanted to start with these. The first one is, what are your predictions for the indie creative scene in the next few years? How do you foresee traditional gatekeeping being further disrupted?
Yeah, wow, I love that question.
I know, I knew
really,
you
really,
would.
Really, really, really good.
Big fan of Ruth.
I think that at the moment we are laying the foundations for the disruption of the traditional gatekeeping industry. I don't think we've seen... It's hard to make predictions, obviously, and Ruth would know that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Ruth... I know how Ruth thinks. I don't obviously know exactly how Ruth thinks, but I know that Ruth would have been expecting us to provide nuance to this and not expecting us to say a definitive thing. So just saying this is not definitive, my opinion is that we are laying the foundation now for the disruption of most traditional forms of gatekeeping in the arts world. And that's going to lead to chaos.
Yes.
But also a lot of opportunity.
I agree. I think we're currently in the time of rebellion and it is time to ruffle feathers. And that is kind of like our job now as creatives is to disrupt the systems, but it is messy.
But I think it's nothing is established yet. Everything's still so experimental, which is why I think you see people getting seemingly famous overnight, or they seemingly like just explode, you know, and everything everyone's doing just looks kind of weird and wonderful right now. Like there is no example to follow for a lot of things that people want to do.
Yes.
And that is both extremely scary and extremely exciting. Mm-hmm. So I think there'll be a solidifying of sort of pathways from here, or like more defined...
Yes.
You know,
methods of doing things
or ways to make money or
we
ways
might
to disrupt.
Even in like more of a negative way see like this is actually a very fun time to play if you have an appetite for risk.
Yep.
But I feel like maybe we'll see systems that kind of adopt a sense of gatekeeping around these like disruptive pathways. So like do you know what I'm trying to say? Like, we'll have systems that are created that kind of mimic the gatekeeping that we are already trying to defeat. And we have to keep an eye out for that.
There's always an incredible desire in people to solidify and
systemize
and gather power to themselves.
Yes.
I'm incredibly optimistic about people. I think that isn't necessarily something that always happens, but people will always try to do that.
Yes.
Whether or not we let them do that.
Yes.
And whether or not they're able to do that in this current system. I think there's also going to be a destruction of certain gatekeepers as well. Like not all gatekeepers are going to be able to survive in the marketplace, in this new marketplace as well. And that's a good thing often too, because that it will, I mean, I always feel like the more dispersed and grassroots driven something is, the better.
I agree.
In many ways.
If we look specifically at publishing houses, because that is obviously, we are authors and writers and we know this the best. I cannot see publishing houses staying anywhere near the same structure that they are right now in the future. Like they cannot compete with the way authors are doing things.
No, like, I mean, look at what, I know we talk about him all the time, but look at what Brando Sando is doing at the moment with his Kickstarter campaigns. And he is essentially a publisher now. And he's a publisher more like, this might be a bad analogy, but more like a Marvel or something, you know, he's like got his own cinematic universe going on where you can sell merch and he can sell many different kinds of books and premium kinds of books. And he talks about how to innovate in the publishing industry by, you know, he's always like, why don't publishers sell the ebook and the audiobook with the hard copy book, you know, and things like this that are going to be much easier for people to disrupt with and go off on their own with.
Yeah.
And yes, I mean, people say, oh, but we don't have the millions of dollars of resources that Brandon Sanderson has, but this is sort of what happens though, you know, the big players with the resources go first and they make it possible for the smaller players and people get used to that and people adapt to that.
Yes. And I think simultaneously small players can still come first. What do you think about that?
I think you're 100% right. I think an advantage of being a small player is that you can move quickly and you don't have a lot of obligations. So yes, of course, but he's going to be able to do it at scale first.
Yes. And he's very visible so people can copy.
And he's going to get into the people like him. I'm not saying just him, but people like him are going to be the people who get it into the public consciousness. Or even if you look at like, because I think at the moment there's a lot of small creators who are making money in that independent model. Think about us, think about people like Alexis or Brooke, but they're not famous or people don't know about that. So like it's almost like hidden knowledge.
Yeah.
Whereas people like Brandon Sanderson who are doing more of a hybrid thing,
they're
going to bring it more into the public consciousness and it's going to be seen more possible to do those sort of things.
When I was, lol, name drop, having a conversation with Lewis Howes, he was like, I want to self-publish all my future novels. And like, that's a very big name. And it's clearly conversations that these nonfiction big authors are talking about.
Yeah.
And I think it's so interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you see it in the music industry as well, not that I know that much about, but aren't, like, doesn't Chance do all his own stuff?
Yeah.
Does Stormzy do his own stuff?
Yeah, I mean, like, having your own label and stuff.
Yeah.
God, we're so ignorant.
I mean, we're so ignorant about that sort of thing, but we're not very musical people.
I mean, I have hundreds of CDs. That's a quote. It's a niche quote.
Is it? What's it from?
It's from Black Books. I must be musical. I've got hundreds of CDs.
It must be musical. I go to the top charts on Spotify and I listen to, like, a lot of things on shuffle while I drive.
Yes, but the music industry is one that comes up a lot because, you know, artists are so badly treated.
Mm.
And, you know, and also, like, just the systemic stuff there is so painful, like the female creatives and female artists who are so badly mistreated by a very gendered system as well. Like, we have to find ways to change it. And I'm so excited. We are the generation that changes it. We are the start. We are the beginning.
It's way easier to make a margin on or a profit on your own stuff. Like, Amy's fiction books will make more money for her than, like, if she'd sold 5 or 10x the copies through a traditional publisher.
Yeah.
Like, it's so much, you get so much more of that money back.
Yeah.
So if you can find ways to do it, it's just...
Respectfully, I'm way better at marketing and I'm way better at, and I can action things. Yeah, literally, in fact, you would have to do your own marketing
anyway if you were with a publisher. So it's like, although you're getting the distribution, you're getting the bookshops. That's pretty much it.
Yeah. So the one big thing is the bookshop. So it'd be interesting to look at how self-publishing, like how bookshops adapt to it, you know?
Yeah.
Because that's the one big hole that the publishers still have, is they have access to the bookshops.
I mean, the worrying trend is that publishers are conglomerating and
vomit.
They're buying each other up and forming big mega corporations, but they're so unprofitable and, like, slow and clunky. It's like, cool, you know? So you're going to form a really big clunky shit organization, and how's that going to compete?
They make no money.
Yeah.
They're all so poor.
Yeah. And it's just because they haven't adapted their business model for 60 years, and it's like, well, I'm sorry.
Like, have some innovation.
Do you feel like publishing is exactly the same as it was 60 years ago?
Yeah.
Wait, anyway.
Anyway, great question, Ruth. Thank you. I'm going to go on to another Ruth question.
Great.
You interact and support so many creatives. What are the most common things that creatives seem to want answers, guidance on? And is it the right focus? Or are there more themes you wish your community wanted to explore?
It's really interesting.
I know.
Mm. I mean, you're in the DMs a lot more than me, so you would know this more.
Yes. You know, creatives are such complex beings. I do get a real range of questions. I do get a lot of questions from very big beginners who have just decided that they want to start creating. And the question of where do I start is something that frequents my DMs a lot. Like, I want to write a book. Where do I start? Like, I think that's a telltale sign of the fact that living a creative life or making art has been kind of romanticized and, like, made so much bigger than it need to be. Like, people want to make art, but they literally have no idea where to start when the starting point is so easy, so simple, so unromantic in many ways. And I think that is evidence of just, like, a story around what it means to be an artist.
Yeah, it has to be some kind of big grand gesture or hard thing.
Yeah.
Whereas people should be... What do you think people should be more worried about? Just, like, how do I find 10 minutes in my day to do something?
Well, my question is, like, you're reaching out to me and asking, like, how do I start? And my immediate thing is, I don't think the problem is where do you start?
Yeah.
I think there's something else there. There's something behind it. And you think the issue is, oh, it's such a big project. Where do I start? Whereas I would probably bet a lot that there's some sort of fear there that's making them think it's much bigger than it is.
I think that... It sounds like a perfectionist thing.
Perfectionism.
Right? And perfectionists are often, I find perfectionists are often the most blinded to their, I don't want to say issues, because there's nothing immoral or wrong about being a perfectionist. I think it's more like perfectionists often don't realize that perfectionism is what's holding them back, because they think it's a strength.
Yes.
And it's not, it can be a strength in some ways, but yes. You actually have to fight against your nature if you're a perfectionist, if you want to get anything done.
Yeah. I mean, the books that I wrote for the perfectionist, for the procrastinator, for the burnout, I wrote those three books because that's what I see the most.
Yeah.
Perfectionism, procrastination, and burnout. And obviously they're deeply interlinked. And these are the issues that I come across the most.
Mm.
It's a really good question. I kind of wish I had mulled it over a little bit more.
I feel like we were having a conversation about this the other day. Like, a lot of people messaging you about something that was really going around lately that you were like, oh, I'm getting a lot of DMs about...
Was it about perfectionism? Maybe we should come back to
that. A lot of people ask you how to journal.
A lot of people ask me how to journal.
Which I guess is not really an answer to the question.
It isn't.
But I think...
All questions are valid. I think, you know, they're all super valid. And no, I don't wish that we were looking at something else. I think that no matter what the question is, it nearly always comes back to a fear of being vulnerable, a fear of being seen. Like, there's some always basics that sit underneath creative issues. And sometimes I wish that we could be more aware of the fact that they always are going to sit there. And I feel like I'm a bit of a broken record when it comes to these answering these questions and supporting these people, because I'm always like, okay, well, what's sitting underneath?
I know what a huge one is.
Yeah.
That a lot of people don't think they have the right to create in a world that's broken. And that is a huge one.
You're right.
I just banged my funny bone against the wall. I'm okay.
This one has become more and more frequent, and this one breaks my heart. Mm. And I spoke about it on the pod with Lisa Oliveira a few weeks ago. So if you are someone who is like, how dare I create in a world that's in pain? How dare I create in a world with climate change, with, you know, disaster? I recommend listening to that. But that one, for me, just like, I don't know why, but I really grieve it. I feel extremely broken when I talk to creatives who feel this way. Mm. And I'm always too emotionally involved.
Yes.
Like, it really upsets me to listen to creatives who are like, how could I do that? It's not helpful. It's not useful. When the world is so in pain, how dare I? I just think it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And deeply bad for the world that so many of us think this way.
Yeah. I mean, because it's like the narrative of all the negative thought forces in the world has won then. Because they're like, haha, you should all just give up. You should do nothing.
Yeah.
You should just sit there and...
Oh my God.
Feel powerless against us.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway... I feel like I still have a lot of thoughts to develop on that.
Mm, yeah, it's tricky.
Okay, next question. Still from Ruth. Ruth just slammed out bangers after bangers. Do you have any opinions or viewpoints that have changed in the last few years? What led to that change and how did it impact your own journey?
Yeah, I'm sure I have. This is such a tricky question. I actually panicked when I heard that because often, you know, Tim Ferriss often asks that to people, and I'm like, oh my gosh, what would I say?
Oh, really? You've thought about it before?
Yeah.
Well, I know one obvious one. First of all, I hope forever that I will always be someone who can change my mind. Mm-hmm. And I think it's like literally one of my top priorities. Well, I almost
feel like my mind changes so often about so many things that it's hard to answer.
Good.
Yep.
So I know we changed slightly on our staunch consistency every day kind of approach, which is something we really like peddled at the beginning. And I still deeply believe in consistent small practices each day. But listening a bit more to the ADHD community and just understanding that people's patterns are different, I still think for a lot, and I don't know if I want to say most, but I think for a lot of creatives, doing small amounts consistently is the way to write novels, the way to complete big projects. But that doesn't mean it's for everybody. Yeah. And
what's really more important is understanding your own rhythms.
Yes, way more important to understand your own rhythms.
And really trying to drill down on that and trying to understand yourself and understand what works for you.
Yeah, understand your own version of consistency.
And not letting stories of like, well, my rhythm is that I can't ever do anything.
Yeah.
Not letting those stories become the pervasive stories for you as well, if you can.
Yeah. Have you thought of anything else?
No, I'm panicking.
It's okay. We can come back to it later you'll have seen a lot of creatives blossom and achieve their goals. Are there common traits or behaviors, patterns you see amongst them that you think...
Is this from Ruth again?
Yeah, that you think contribute to their growth?
Well, I do think that consistency or even just the... It doesn't have to be like... If I look at someone, say, like Alexis.
Yes.
Or like Laura Hesp. Yes. I don't necessarily see them... I don't know actually what their pattern is. I don't necessarily see them creating every day.
Yeah.
But if you look over the course of a year, they're just slowly...
They're always coming back to it.
Coming back to it. Semi-regularly, at least.
I immediately thought of the word tenacity. And if I see like a tenaciousness in a creative, I witness success.
Yeah.
When they've just got their claws in, and that doesn't mean, you know, they're ruining themselves, burning themselves, but there's a passion within them that's very you cannot extinguish it. Yeah. And it drives them.
Yes. And I think related to that is, I think you see people who try for a month, 2 months, and then they don't really make as much headway as they originally hoped they would, and then you just don't see them again.
Yeah.
And I think that's obviously, I mean, it sounds very obvious, but it's the people who can keep going for years.
Yeah.
And that's obviously a luxury, and that's obviously not something that everyone feels like they can do. But I think that's, you just will not basically create sustainable creative success without at least finding a way to keep going. Yeah. I think
to move through failure.
I
have thought about this a bit, and I've thought about, can I pick when someone is going to be able to complete the project, and can I pick people who are moving towards success? And I obviously am not God, but I think I can see it when someone really wants it. And I can see it when someone is willing to move through very, very large amounts of discomfort to achieve success.
Yeah. And obviously it's not just as complicated as you got to want it.
No, it is. Because
that requires unpacking layers and layers of other things, and it requires other things in your life, you know.
Self-awareness is a big one, I think.
Yeah. And obviously it's hard to create consistently if other things in your life are falling apart. And
oh my God, yeah.
If there's not, if you don't, I mean, you have to, in the stars have to align in many ways.
Yes. Yeah, luck can be part of it.
Yeah.
Mm.
But at the same time, it's like, if you're not willing to create through failure.
Yeah.
It's just impossible. It's literally impossible. Everyone will have a failure point.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even once you feel like you succeed, you're going to have more failures. So it's like, if you're not willing to keep going despite some failures, it's like, it just is literally impossible.
Yeah. You have to be able to move through it.
Mm.
Okay, last one from Ruth, and it says just for Amy, so shut the fuck up, James. Okay. What's something you're particularly proud of or love about your latest published novel? Something maybe people haven't pointed out or commented on yet? What a delightful question. Thank you, Ruth. So my latest novel,
Yeah, it's Regrettably.
Regrettably.
I am about to cause trouble. Oh my gosh, what's happening here?
So if you don't know, I name my books at the very, very end. And I name them by going through the novel and finding a line that I like. So I've always just called this book Maud, and I call my first book Elizabeth. And I don't know why, but I struggle to remember the title. what's something I love that people haven't noticed? I don't know. Something that I always want to be able to do, and I enjoy it when historical fiction novels do this, and maybe I want to do it in the future, is like asterisks, like historical fact. Like, there's so much historical fact within this book of fiction, and I always want to tell people about it. Like, I want to tell people that Rufus is a real character, and that Reasonable Blackman, as he is called, is that a spoiler? It is.
Is it?
A little bit.
It's been out for long enough now.
Okay. Was a real man, and he was a trumpeter in Henry VIII's court, and they literally named him Reasonable Blackman. And he was a real man, and his story is there. It's documented. It's true. And there's little bits and bobs there where I'm like, that's true. That's true too. And I just want to like have an asterisk and be like, this is a real thing. I didn't make this up. This is real.
Especially because like calling a character a Reasonable Blackman seems like you're being a bit racist.
Yes. I mean, it's obviously deeply racist. It's
because the Tudors were extremely racist. It's
deeply racist. Yeah. Yeah. He was Henry's trumpeter. And I embellish his story, obviously, but incredible and wild life he led. Very bizarre.
So much research goes into those novels, and so many things that, the thing about studying history is that a lot of things seem fucking ridiculous.
Yes.
Like, I remember, I've probably told this story in the podcast before, being in a writing group, and my third novel, which I abandoned after pretty much working on it for a year and a half and finishing two drafts of it and deciding it wasn't workable. The premise is that there are four tetrarchs of this empire, so four kings essentially.
I remember this.
And someone in my writing group was like, I just don't believe it, it's not possible, like how could that ever work? And I'm like, I'm so sorry, but this happened in history not just once but multiple times. And that's what I'm basing this on. And people were like, I don't believe it, it's just, how could it just seems so unbelievable.
Yeah.
And that's something that's really interesting about writing inspiring things from history or writing historical fiction.
I'm not being modest. I think the best parts of my books are the historically accurate parts, because I think it's so fascinating. Also, like, this whole book is about like the kind of motley, bizarre and outcast people that lived in this history. And Henry Tudor had fools, and it's hard to discern what disability they had, but they were disabled, and they used to call them, they had half their minds in the heaven. So clearly like some sort of mental disability that made them appear quite different, and it is hard to discern like what type of disability they might have had. But these characters are real and they have stories, and you know, it was such a privilege to get to read history about them and to get to understand them and to get to write them.
I think the interesting thing about looking at the medieval or Renaissance Europeans is that it so informs white Western culture today, that, and yes, it's close, so close enough to, it's in many ways close to us, but then it just has these bizarre tints to it.
Yes,
more than the Romans. We're talking about very Western specific history because this is what we get taught at our universities and high schools. Absolute in Australia classic. And you know, the Romans just have a very, it's different enough, and their philosophy and alive, probably because there's no Christianity influencing it.
Yeah,
it's very different. I mean, the pagan religions often I find seem foreign. Cultures influenced by the non-Christian religions or non-Abrahamic religions often seem very, very different to us.
Yeah,
and different enough that you can just dismiss their behavior as like, oh, it's like an alien culture doing that. Whereas the medieval and Renaissance Europeans, you go, I can see elements of us in this, and it's like bizarro world.
It is, and it's part of the reason why I like to play that because, you know, especially for Elizabeth, the rules are upheld by no one. They, you know, these are our stories. These are our stories. And yes, they have this bizarre, almost like hyper-colored or like, you know, really like vibrant portrayal of the stories. But the stories of sexual shame that Elizabeth goes through in like 1539, you know, deeply mirror my own stories now because we have inherited that world.
Mm.
And, you know, I mean, it's not for me to say because I'm not disabled or black, but the stories of, you know, these black Tudors and disabled Tudors, like, you know, that's we have so much of that heritage, and we can see the discrimination in our world, you know, in their world. Yeah. It's not that long ago.
No, you can see the foundations for a lot of
huge foundations,
a lot
for
of the problems with our society already being laid back then.
And that's why for me it is such a fascinating story, like time to write about.
Yeah,
really interesting. And like my story I'm writing right now, Jack, is about like a gender bending, and like Jack was born a female but like plays with gender a lot. And that happened, like we have so much evidence of, you know, cross-dressing and you know, really interesting, like, oh, just it's so full of history. And like I love that I get to play within these realms.
It's cool. It's really cool.
I really love getting to talk about my books, and I don't feel like I do it enough. Thank you, Ruth. Okay, I'd love to know more about James's journey with writing novels. How is it going? What is his intent for his finished books and his creative path? How have you decided to abandon that one novel?
Yeah, interesting. Okay, thank you, Lucy, for your question. So my full writing history is I'm writing my fourth book at the moment. Book one, I didn't think it was my practice book. I liked it a lot.
I liked it too.
You're about to get annoyed at me, I know.
No, I just like that book.
Book two, I'm literally still submitting it to publishers.
Yeah.
I have breaks and I get triggered by it and I feel annoyed by it, and I'll do like 10 submissions. And that one's actually has, I feel like it's going reasonably well. Like I'm getting responses and
you are.
It just takes a long fucking time.
It does. It's such, again, like this is the benefit of leaving a gatekeeping world, right? Is speed.
Yeah. And it's like people that you want to submit to will not be open for a period. So you have to check back like a year later and see if they're open.
Yeah.
So that's where that is. Would I ever self-publish that one? I think I might.
Yeah.
One day.
It's a brilliant book.
I would be happy to. Mm-hmm. The problem is with that book, I think at the moment, is it's about bushfires essentially, but it's a sci-fi kind of semi-dystopian future. And the climate fiction has now become a very competitive market.
It has.
And I think I've got enough of a niche, but I don't think it's going to be hard to stand out against. It's a very Australian story.
Mm.
And a lot of responses I've gotten from publishers are just like, we just don't get the Australian side of it.
Yeah.
It's just like, they don't get the language of the Australians. They don't get the cultural Australia culturally. And that's a big problem. But I think that you could find a niche in the indie market.
Yeah, definitely.
So that would be interesting. I'd definitely be willing to look at that. I probably will see if I can exhaust pub. The reason I want to go traditional publishing right now is just because I still feel like I'm learning and I want to get better before. And either a traditional publisher, I want them to help mentor me in a certain way.
Yes.
or I want to just keep going by myself until I get to the point where I feel like I'm a mature author.
Yeah, interesting.
And obviously for me right now, I'm not financially dependent on publishing my novels, so I feel like I have the luxury of time to wait.
You do.
So,
and you enjoy it so much.
And I'm just enjoying I enjoy the process so much that it's not a big deal for me.
Yeah.
The third novel, I tried to do a crime fantasy novel, and I just plotted it to... I tied myself in knots plotting it. I didn't plot it. I should have plotted it.
You went Amy.
Yeah. And I was really passionate about the setting. I love the world building. I have structured a whole other novel in that world, which is sort of inspired. So actually that novel is inspired by... So my, I don't know if you know, if people... I've talked about this in the podcast, but my grandmother is a Holocaust survivor. And she spent 2 years of her life living in a hole in the ground, hiding from the Nazis. And then she was eventually captured and taken to Auschwitz. And that sort of part of her story has inspired this other novel in that world, because in this world, the Roman Empire kind of fascist Nazis, essentially, some of them are. And I want to write the story of the kind of Jewish culture that's in this world.
Yeah.
Who, anyway, so there's a kind of a Holocaust-y lens to it.
Yeah.
And I'm really interested in that story. I've done a 12,000-page structural description of that novel, which I might get to as my fifth novel.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just tied myself in knots on the plot.
Crime, we both decided to do crime at the same time.
Yeah. And there were too many layers, and I was like, it will take me longer to fix this than it will take me just to write a new novel.
Yeah.
So I was like, time, and I can abandon projects. It doesn't really bother me that much, I guess. Like, I liked the feeling of finishing, so I did it to the point where I finished the first draft, I finished the second draft, and I was like, nope, I think I've given this enough thought now that I know.
Yeah.
I have earned the right to abandon this.
Yeah.
And now we're writing our fourth book together.
Yeah. So it's interesting, the process of this fourth book. James, because I'm still finishing Jack at the moment, and I want Jack to be out by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
It's like fucking nearly April, so lol. So I've just been doing that, and James has been kind of doing a very intense structuring and start of the first draft of this new novel, which we are writing together.
I'm making like files for all the world building things, so Amy can just come in and have essentially like notes to check on anything she needs to know about the world. And we're doing character arcs, and we're doing chapter structures and everything like that, which Amy would never do by herself.
I've never done that in my life.
But we have the time, because I have a gap now where I have written, I think, 12,000 words of this, of my side of the story. But a lot of my writing time at the moment is the
structure
stuff to help the co-creation of it.
Yeah, like a Bible.
Yeah.
For us to share.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's going to be my first dabble with sci-fi. LOL.
I think Amy does read a lot of sci-fi.
That's a crazy sentence.
Yeah. I mean, I would say it's like 20 to 30% of what you read.
Okay, yeah.
Especially of late.
But it's often quite simple sci-fi. So I don't, like, I love Becky Chambers so much. Her books are phenomenal. And if anyone's like hesitant on the sci-fi side of things, like, Becky Chambers is like the most incredible writer.
Although we tried to make Emma read it and she abandoned it on like page two. But
Emma was a pussy about it.
Yeah.
Like, she just needed to give it a fucking minute. Emma, I know you're listening. So yeah, it's gonna be super fun. Like, I've written a little bit. I've maybe written like 6,000 words, and we're splitting it up just by having different POVs, so point of views. So I have two characters and James has two characters, and yeah, it's gonna be really fun.
Yeah,
so good.
Yeah.
All right, it's gonna be quite a long podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, that's okay.
Is it all right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How do you think your move will affect your creativity work? This is from Katie. Not just the positives, but also the potential negatives and challenges you might need to keep an eye on. And how do you hope to face them?
I'm really worried about it.
We've been discussing this and thinking about this like so much. And I have been personally trying to do a lot of different things to make sure that we are going to feel safe creatively and also physically, to keep our routines.
Yeah. I've written pretty much all of my novels at the Whole Leaf Cafe in Narrabeen, Australia.
It's so beautiful.
And I don't know how I'm going to do without that.
Yeah. So some like, there's just bizarre things. Like, in England, like, in Australia, cafes open like 6 a.m. In England, they don't open to like 10. So it's like, okay, but our morning routine is like, so we can't really go to cafes. And it's like, So what are we going to do? And like, you know, this house is so different. We're moving to a cottage with four rooms, not four rooms, four bedrooms.
Mm-hmm.
We, and we're, you know, coming from a place where we've only had two rooms, so we're going to have different spaces where we can create, like, can we, are we going to create systems within the house for creativity? Like, a lot of this is unknown.
Yeah.
And that's really scary.
I think I'm excited by the challenge of seeing if I can do it.
Yeah.
And seeing how I do it.
And you're going
to
do it.
Because I know that I need to write for my mental health.
Yeah.
So I need to find a way.
I have absolute faith you're going to, but I know that that's not going to, it's going to be hard.
Mm.
But we've had slumps in our writing, you know, the pandemic. Wow, that word just went.
Yeah.
The pandemic was challenging for us in terms of our structure because we lost the whole leaf there as well.
Mm.
But I know that we're going to be able to do it. We're just going to have to, I think what we're going to require is patience, and we're going to have to not get annoyed at ourselves.
Yeah, I'm very willing to give myself some time to adjust.
Great.
And be gentle with myself. But also, I know I'm going to get annoyed at myself.
It's just, you know, we thrive on structure.
Mm.
And it's going to be difficult.
I've also, so not only have I written all my novels at the Whole Leaf, I've written all my novels between 7:15 a.m. and 8:30 a.m.
It's just so beautiful. So,
but pretty much.
You like, have.
With a few exceptions. Yeah. But yeah.
It's just wild. Yeah, so we're gonna have to find new ways. Mm. I still think I want to write in the morning, but I think we're just gonna have to do it in the house. We're gonna have to, but we're gonna make our studies, like, I'm so excited to show you guys. I'm gonna be vlogging like this cottage creation. Like, I really have a vision. I don't know why, for James so much more than me, I have a vision of James's space.
And it's very cute of you.
It's so pure of me, isn't it? I want to get you like a Roman bust, and I want to create this like creative study for you, like one you've never had before that feels so creatively fulfilling. And I want it to be a place where all the rest of your novels are written for this next upcoming season.
It sounds really good.
I know I'll be okay.
The thing that's worrying me is that my PlayStation will also be in that space.
You're worried
you're going to, for example, and I'll have internet.
Play the station.
Yes, and we'll have internet. Which maybe I just need to find a way to block internet for between 7:15 and 8:30 a.m.
That's definitely an app.
I can do that.
Well, then we'll just do that.
Okay.
We're going to do that.
Okay.
The internet is tricky.
Yeah.
But we're going to do
that. I mean, it's a simple solution that I could just do.
We're definitely going to do that.
Okay.
How about the whole house doesn't have internet in the mornings? How cool would that be?
Is that even possible?
Well, you just turn the whole internet, like it's blocked on everything.
Like you manually turn it off.
You just unplug it. I don't know.
So as soon as you wake up, plunk.
You just, or you, before you go to bed, you unplug.
Interesting.
I don't know.
Maybe.
I thought an app would do it.
I don't know if you can like access the router through an app.
It's a dumb thing to say.
I feel like it's an Amy thing where you're just like, tech will do it.
Tech will do it.
And then when it doesn't exist, the tech doesn't exist. Like, you're like, oh my God.
What am we I are
living in the Stone Age.
Disgusting. But yeah, this is such a great question because definitely something we think about, and we know we're going to face a lot of challenges. But also, I'm so excited to have space. I'm so excited to have coziness because we don't really get a huge amount of coziness in this country.
Nope.
But there's going to be fireplaces. There are two fireplaces in this cottage.
It's going to be tricky because I'm anti feeling warm.
Yeah.
I'm anti hot. So, and I'm also anti any kind of gas heater because I don't like stuffiness.
I just want a fireplace.
I know, fire is okay. It's more like a radiant heat. I accept that.
I just want to describe my studio space.
Okay.
So I'll obviously vlog it, LOL, but I want to have the room at the front of the house because it gets some morning light and there's a fireplace. So there's like a little room when you first enter this cottage, and it's like got these beautiful big windows, a little box fireplace and a couch, and I'm kind of thinking that I'll like put it, set up a desk there and have kind of that as my own creative space.
It sounds really lovely.
I know, I'm so excited.
Mm.
Okay, do you feel like we kind of answered that question?
Yeah.
Should we do one or two more?
Yep. When you said we had like 15 questions,
yeah,
did you mean was Ruth counted as one?
No, or? Ruth was counted as,
okay, that's good.
Yeah. Okay, this is an interesting one. Sarah says, I've been part of the collective for a few years and I've barely dipped my toe in. This is my year, no matter what it takes. I've enrolled in all of your offered courses and subscribed to all your podcasts. Do you have a recommendation on where to start? Should they be done simultaneously or separately in a particular order to get the most benefit?
It's really interesting. Because I think it is hard because you join the collective and there are like 60 masterclasses you could watch.
Yeah.
And you go, do I go back to the beginning?
Yeah.
And I definitely don't think you go back to the beginning.
No.
I mean, you can if you want to, but I think there's no pressure. There's not, because we're such messy people, there's no curriculum.
No, there's no curriculum.
And I think if you have access to the We Need Your Art course,
yeah,
that's a good foundation.
The We Need Your Art course is a beautiful foundation.
Mm.
And I think it will let you know where your areas of weakness or vulnerability are, yeah. and then you can go hunt out
extra things. Right.
So say you do the We Need Your Art course and you really resonate with the business part of it. Okay, so let's go to the podcast, find the business podcasts that we do, and go to the Inspire Collective archive and find the business ones.
And we also have ones on social media, which will be helpful too.
Yes. As well. So pick a pain point. Mm. I would pick a pain point.
Yeah, don't try and... It's too exhausting to go, I need to listen to 60 hours of masterclasses.
My God, yeah. And Sarah, you don't need all that. Like, you don't need all that.
No, and not saying that everything we do isn't valuable, because of course I love our masterclasses. Because
we're genius.
But I think it's, yeah, it's good. Yeah. That's too much.
I would pick something to focus on, you know? And again, like, maybe I would also recommend, if you're really unsure, like you've got feel like we've got way too much, then I would choose a journaling course and start with the journaling compendium, the journaling course, and just kind of touch base with you. Because instead of me talking to you and James talking to you, that's kind of like you talking to you.
Hmm.
And you can really start learning about where that pain point is, and then maybe you could go from there.
Especially because if you do the We Need Your Art course and the journaling course before you do the master classes, it's going to set you up as well, because then we journal in the master classes.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It'll set you up with being a bit more of a practice journaler if you're yeah. not already.
Yeah.
Okay. But yes, I do think that you can do the Inspire Collective more a la carte, just as you like them.
Yeah.
You don't have to go in order. You can go in reverse order.
Yeah, go browse through and see which like kind of resonates with you.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't feel pressure, I think, to do absolutely everything. I don't think it's going to... And also, by the same token, I think we don't like... we do build on things, but it's not like you have to have watched one to watch another.
No, you don't. No. You don't have to have done that at all.
Yeah. I hope that if you want any more specific questions about that, please DM us.
Yeah, just DM and we can talk through it.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to leave it there.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So then we'll do the rest next week. Independently.
Yes.
I'm really interested to see how this works.
Yeah, we'll have to see. We'll see.
I love doing Q&A episodes.
Yeah, me too. It's
so good.
It feels really like we're in conversation with you all, and we're so grateful for that.
Yeah.
So thank you, Collective, for those beautiful questions.
Yeah, thank you, Collective.
And we'll see you next week individually. Do you know what? Hold on, before you press stop.
Sure.
The questions are, a lot of the ones that I've left are very writer focused. And me and James are quite different writers. We have a different process.
That's going to be interesting.
So it will be interesting to see.
So you haven't gone in chronological order?
I just picked
what you think would be better for the two of us. Okay, cool. That's great.
All right. Okay, thank you, my loves. Have a beautiful, beautiful week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.